we're the Denver Broncos cheerleaders, and you're listening to Sports Crunch with DeGrom.
Kittens are. This is Sports Crunch with DeGrom. I'm your host, David Cromwell. It is officially draft week, and we are just over 72 hours away from the moment Roger Goodell officially opens the 2024 NFL draft in Detroit. This past month and a half, we went to all eight divisions on our annual Dash to the Draft divisional tour, where we analyzed the draft needs of all 32 clubs. And we also took a deep dive into the prospects that constitute this 2024 draft class in six of seven position groups. Today, we look into the seventh and final and most important position group of prospects, quarterback. Quarterback is by far the most valuable position in all sports. If you're an NFL team and you don't have an absolute stud under center, you have an almost 0% chance of winning a Super Bowl. Thus, the legacy of the 2024 NFL draft will largely be defined by how its intriguing crop of field generals fares at the pro level. Joining us to share his scouting reports on these soon-to-be NFL quarterbacks, plus his assessment on how successful he thinks they'll be, is our good friend Devin Jackson, who is the sports editor and lead NFL draft writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Devin, it's always an absolute treat to have you and your wealth of football knowledge on our program. How you doing, my man?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me as always, David. Always great to come on and talk NFL draft prospects. And obviously, we're talking quarterbacks today, and that's always an interesting conversation, I think. I wouldn't say that people kind of view this class differently per se, but I would say they view on how high some of these players' ceilings are and how soon they can start. So it's always interesting to talk quarterbacks. Everyone wants to talk about them and every year. Especially in a year like this where we could have four go in the top 10. It's always the most interesting time of year, and it drives the conversation around draft time.
The draft discussion revolves around the quarterback position because the game of football itself revolves around the quarterback position. And without further ado, Devin, let's get down to business here. The headliner of this year's quarterback class is obviously Caleb Williams, who's considered by many in NFL circles as one of the most exciting prospects at the position in the past several decades. Due to his jaw-dropping arm talent, accuracy, incredible pocket presence, and electrifying playmaking abilities, he has drawn comparisons to Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and obviously Patrick Mahomes. While his skill set, traits, and sky-high ceiling are undeniable, Caleb Williams is far from a slam dunk to be as good as those aforementioned field generals. One area of his game that needs to be ironed out is his over-reliance on out-of-structure plays, because you can't depend on those plays at the NFL level as often as you can at the college level. However, as ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, an excellent football mind herself, noted, whenever Caleb had to play in structure at USC, he proved he is more than capable of doing so. Do you agree with your view there?
Yeah, I do agree. I do think that, you know, a lot of talk is obviously around what he can do outside of the pocket, you know, kind of the crazy plays that he makes, the next level plays that he makes that draws these comparisons. But on a down basis, he is actively trying to work from structure, and you can physically see that in this game. And a lot of times he's bailing the pocket just because he has no time to throw, and the pocket's closing around him, and he's getting blitzed, and he has to make something happen on third and long. So a lot of those plays, it kind of stems from the struggles that the offensive line had, the struggles in some of the play calling and receivers being able to get open downfield. But in terms of his ability to maneuver the pocket, feel that pressure, step around it and step up in the pocket and make throws, I mean, it's the best in the class, and it's why he's the top quarterback in this class. While a lot of these other guys are showing flashes of doing so or do it at an inconsistent rate, he did it at a pretty consistent rate. And obviously, this year wasn't as successful in terms of statistical and wins and losses for Caleb Williams, but in terms of his talent, his ability to make more passing lanes for himself as the pressure continued to close around him. It just shows how good of a quarterback prospect he is, and I'm really ultimately excited to see him in a Chicago Bears uniform here in a few days.
Absolutely. And we in Chicago feel the exact same way. And I'm glad you said what you just said about Caleb being able to work from structure, because another knock on his game is that he tried to be Superman far too often, always looking for the home run play as opposed to taking what the defense gives him. However, a big reason for that could have been the overall supporting cast at USC. First of all, as you said, he had an atrocious offensive line in front of him last year, and in all eight of his career losses with the Trojans, the defense surrendered an average of 43 points per game. Do you think going to a team like the Bears, who have an ascending defense, can help him tremendously in outgrowing his habit of being on the high dive far too often?
Yeah, I think then you'll kind of, you know, cut back on the high variance plays and the plays that he has to be Superman and has to ultimately lift the team around him, because we know he has that ability. And I think that's the ability you have to be a really good draft prospect. You have to be able to lift those around you. And several times in his career, he had to do so, whether it was at Oklahoma or at USC, where his defense wasn't, up to snuff, and he had to go out and score and essentially outscore teams. And you saw that in those big games, even in the losses to Utah, you know, whether it was in the regular season or the Pac-12 title game, and some of the other losses that he suffered, even the loss to Tulane, the Cotton Bowl. You know, there were so many times that he put up 40-plus points offensively and had them, you know, buzzing offensively, but the defense couldn't get a stop or couldn't get a late stop, or he had to go be back out on the field within a few minutes. So I think it will certainly benefit him, essentially in Chicago, to be able to just focus on moving the ball, taking what the defense gives you, and be able to kind of build that consistency and understand when he can take those deep shots, he can make those miraculous plays, but do it in small segments. So it allows him to play a much cleaner game and like I said, cut back on some of those high variance plays.
Absolutely. And a couple weeks ago, we had a Robert Schmitz of DeBears blog, another great football mind, on this program for our NFC North draft preview. And he said that if the Bears end up going defense with their other first round pick, a lot of Bears Twitter is going to go absolutely berserk. But if you're Ryan Poles and you decide to stay put at 9, and if those big three wide receivers are gone by then, and you get an offer to trade down a reasonable distance and select, say, a Byron Murphy in the early to mid-teens, and get another mid-round pick to use on like a Keon Coleman or Ricky Pearsall or a Roman Wilson, do you think that would be a good move by the Bears? And do you think that would be a very good to support Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I think I talked about this before in terms of being able to not only hitting on Caleb, but being able to continue to build those complementary pieces around him. And you know, some of the needs on the Bears defense specifically is, a really true pass rushing high upside defensive lineman and an edge rusher. And it seems like this class, especially at the top, has that ability to have those guys. And, with them having obviously pick 9, but the ability to potentially trade back and get more assets in the class that's really strong in that top 100, I think it makes a lot of sense to move back to continue to find value, not only, you know, with some of your first round picks, but and on the day 2 picks especially, which I feel like is kind of the best collection of talent overall, is on day 2 in this particular draft class, and just in terms of depth and the amount of players that could end up being there on day 2 as well. But yeah, I mean, you want to continue to add weapons, whether it's that receiver, whether it's maybe looking at another tight end next to Cole Kmet. I mean, there's plenty of options in this draft class, and you couldn't go wrong in terms of being able to address those things. But Byron Murphy will be great for the Bears. I think he makes a lot of sense in terms of the fit. Receiver-wise, this class is so deep that you can get starters, late round 3, maybe early round 4 as well, at a position where the Bears can continue to upgrade after obviously acquiring DJ Moore last year.
Absolutely, Devin. Thank you so much for that healthy dose of sanity there. And now moving right along. As we began this 2024 draft process last summer, there was a quarterback who generated almost as much excitement as Caleb Williams in draft media circles, and that was North Carolina's Drake May. In many respects, That's still the case right now, as Derek Klassen and other elite quarterback minds I really trust say that May and Caleb Williams are the only quarterbacks in this draft that are truly worth a top 10 pick. Plus, Drake May has very comparable traits to Justin Herbert, given his size, he's 6'4", 223, his arm talent, and elite, and I mean elite, scrambling ability. However, the NFL apparently isn't as high on Drake May as us in draft media are, and there's some buzz going around that he could be the fourth quarterback off the board on Thursday night. Why do you think the NFL seems to be underwhelmed by Drake May?
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with the lack of success that Sam Howell had at the NFL level. And although we always talk about don't scout the helmet, especially at the quarterback position, I feel like that's where the biggest don't scout the helmet thing comes from. And I feel like seeing Sam Howell in that similar offense and seeing how Drake May kind of regressed from 2022 to 2023 stats wise and just some of the inconsistencies with this game, I think it's starting to scare some teams off a little bit. But in terms of the talent, I mean, it's pretty evident, you know, when you watch him. Even if you don't feel like he may be the second or third best quarterback in this class, he's still extremely talented. His mobility, his ability to stay in the pocket under duress and deliver throws, I think was the biggest thing that stood out against Clemson at NC State. He was in constant duress, under constant pressure, and still making some big time throws down the field. And similar to Caleb Williams, he had to lift an offense that really struggled not only on the offensive line, but inconsistencies catching the football out at receiver as well. Plenty of drops from Drake May's receiving cast this past season too, that, you know, I think kind of gets overlooked as well. But I think it has a lot to do with kind of the perception of North Carolina quarterbacks, you know, not only Sam Howell, but Mitch Trubisky not ending up turning out to be kind of a star at the NFL level. To a lesser degree, you know, Caleb Williams dealt with that early on in this draft process in terms of USC quarterbacks never end up panning out, but it's kind of subsided. But I think with Drake May, you know, it's always going to be about landing spot and how comfortable he can get at the NFL level. But I think every year he's taken a step in some part of his game. And I think this past year, he turned down some of the recklessness that he had earlier in his career and became a more polished, a more confident, and, you know, a more next level type of quarterback where even when things aren't going well, he still can find ways out of the funk and ultimately have you in games, even if he may not be hitting early on or later on in the game. You want to have the ball in his hand. So I think with May, he's still my quarterback too, and I still truly believe in his ability and the high-level play that he does show. And obviously he needs to balance out with some of those high-variance plays, some of those plays where he's staring down receivers or you know, he's not locating the football correctly, just small things like that. But ultimately, I think in terms of what he brings to the table, I still feel like he's quarterback two in this class. And the overthink on him is, I think, a lot of factors that are kind of out of his control. But ultimately, I feel like once he gets to NFL level and he does end up in a good spot, and it feels like to me, if he ended up like the Vikings, or a team like that, I will feel pretty good about how he would turn out as NFL quarterback.
Oh, I completely agree. And on Friday morning, ESPN NFL draft analyst Matt Miller reported that this whole story of the NFL not being as high on Drake May and Drake May is falling, yada, 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 is far from a consensus viewpoint. Do you think this buzz is really a quarterback needy teams at like the early to mid teens trying to put a BS out there to make him fall or something like that?
Yeah, it's definitely smokescreen season. You know, it's kind of that time of year, especially when you're talking about quarterbacks where guys are being propped up and guys are kind of, quote unquote, pushed down the board. But, you know, we heard a lot of smoke last year about C.J. Stroud and if he was going to go in the top three picks or going to be one of the first quarterbacks off the board, was Will Levis going to go over him? So we've kind of been through this before in terms of quarterbacks having rumors put out about them, teams not liking them as much. You know, it's a bunch of smokescreen right now, especially in the case of May, where he's consistently the second or third quarterback that people have off the board. I don't think it's ultimately going to change within 2-3 weeks of, I mean, he's just meeting with teams, and you know, it's kind of that time of year where you can't believe everything that you read or every rumor that you hear, just because there's so much different motivations behind those rumors.
Absolutely, Devin. And at this moment, Jaden Daniels, the 2023 Heisman Trophy winner, is the overwhelming favorite to be selected by the Commanders with that second overall pick. And when you take a long look, you can see plenty of reasons why. From his freshman year at Arizona State to last year's historic season in LSU, his growth has been nothing short of remarkable. Also, his dazzling abilities as a dual-threat quarterback will force NFL defenses to account for him in similar ways as they have to account for Lamar Jackson. However, for all there is to like about Jaden Daniels, there is just as much to be concerned about. First, he has a very slender frame and had a penchant for taking very hard hits in college, which are likely to be even more violent at the NFL level. Second, aside from his elite deep ball, he didn't show much variety as a passer, as he targeted the middle of the field on just 9.3% of his dropbacks in college. Also, there's a legitimate question as to how easy his supporting cast at LSU made things for him. Keep in mind, he was throwing to two of the top four wide receivers in this draft class in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr., and had his blind side protected by someone who could very well be the number one overall pick in next year's draft in Will Campbell. When you put all those puzzle pieces together, how bullish or bearish are you on Jaden Daniels' long-term NFL outlook, especially if he ends up going to the Commanders at two?
Yeah, I think I still feel pretty bullish about him, just because I feel like when you have a quarterback prospect that's such a dual threat abilities, that is their floor, their ability to get themselves out of trouble, to move the chains with their legs, essentially be that extra person that the defense has to account for, whether it's on running downs, whether as a passer. You're taking someone out of coverage just to spy on him, quote unquote, or to keep an eye on him. So for me, I think he created a floor for himself, you know, as a runner, and his ability to be a dynamic runner. I think he has almost 2,000 yards rushing over the last 2 years at LSU, and with 1,100 coming this year. So that ability, I think, alone helps, you know, kind of build that profile. And then when you look at the Commanders, and you look at really the NFC East in general, and really the NFL in general, you need to have a passer that can move inside the pocket and outside the pocket, and create that that running ability, that scrambling ability, and really force the defense to game plan around that. So I think with Jaden Daniels, he creates such a large floor for himself with that running ability. Now, you know, in terms of supporting cast, I know that it's kind of a big discussion point. Obviously, Stone and Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., really two talented receivers, has some really good offensive linemen protecting him, especially at tackle. But at the NFL level, you know, it's not going to be that much different in terms of the types of talents that you're going to have. Obviously, if you project him to the Commanders, you have Terry McLaurin, you know, and offensive line definitely is a work in progress. But when you look at what the Commanders are right now and where they can invest their resources into, it makes a lot of sense why Daniels is kind of been the guy for them, because of that running ability. And in terms of throwing like over the middle of the field, or the lack thereof, I don't think it's because it's the unwillingness to. I think just because their vertical passing game at LSU was just so strong, hardly any defense had any answer for it, in terms of you can't really double team Malik Nabers, because Brian Thomas Jr., you know, is such a vertical threat. So you have to have a safety over top, and that allows so many one-on-one opportunities. And I just think it's more to talk about the scheme necessarily, and not Jaden Daniels' unwillingness to throw the ball in the middle of the field. I think when he did do it, he looked pretty comfortable in the ability to hit those backside digs and really survey the defense. So I don't think it's a unwillingness to attack the middle of the field. I think it's more of just how the scheme was built and some of the athletes they had out at receiver kind of playing a part in that. But overall, I think when you look at Jaden Daniels, I think certainly what you said about him being able to protect himself is going to be huge at the NFL game, just because that running ability can only get you so far if you can't stay healthy. You know, then you have to really modify your game. So I think he has to be a little bit smarter in terms of how he does those things. You've seen it kind of with Lamar Jackson and what he's been able to do and how he's kind of changed his game ever so slightly. And he still runs the football, but he protects his body when he does it. So I think that's kind of going to be the kind of the biggest learning curve for Daniels in terms of escaping the pocket. But in terms of what he brings as a passer, I think it's all there. You know, has a good release, some pretty good footwork, really confident in delivering throws. I do think he can maneuver the pocket a little bit better in terms of just getting a feel for it and kind of sidestepping pressure, stepping up into the pocket and delivering throws from the pocket. But overall, I think he's a really good player that makes a lot of sense to go inside the top three.
Absolutely. Plus, he is the quarterback archetype that Cliff Kingsbury, the current Commanders offensive coordinator, has traditionally coveted. So his fit in that offense would pretty much be hand in glove. I completely agree there, Devin. And very often, as you know, NFL teams like to select a quarterback based on projection as opposed to prior performance. Josh Allen was a classic example, and this year could yield another quarterback in that vein in Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. Since he played in a run-centric Jim Harbaugh offense, the sample size of him as a passer is far smaller compared to that of his 2024 classmates. That said, NFL scouts and executives are very impressed by his work ethic and intangibles, and there remains a very good chance McCarthy ends up being a top five pick. So, I have a two-part question for you here, Devin. First, what on J.J. McCarthy's game tape suggests he's worth spending a high first-round pick on? And if you don't see such evidence, what do you think the NFL sees that you don't?
Yeah, I think I'm going to talk mainly from an NFL perspective, just because, not that I don't like J.J. McCarthy, I'm just not as bullish as other, you know, as NFL teams are in terms of taking him in the top 10. So I'll kind of speak to that. I think with McCarthy, first of all, teams love young quarterbacks and love young quarterback prospects and guys that have plenty of room to grow and kind of a moldable type of quarterback prospect. And I think that's what you're getting in J.J. McCarthy. Obviously, the rave reviews about his coachability, Bob pointing to his ability to win, you know, as a starting quarterback, whether it's pretty or ugly. And I think that kind of is what appeals to NFL teams, is that he doesn't need the ball to be thrown 40, 50 times to win games. And what I mean by that is that when you look at some of the biggest plays in Michigan season, you know, and some of the defining plays, he often had a hand in them in terms of being able to create, whether it's on fourth downs, being able to create with his legs, whether his ability to get out of structure and make throws down the field, and attacking different areas of the field in the quick game, in the intermediate game. I think that's really where he excels, is in the quick and intermediate game as a passer, and keeping kind of the chains moving and keeping on time, on schedule, keeping the offense moving. And plus that mobility and his ability to escape pressure, to step up into the pocket and escape, and his ability to spray the ball in that 15 to 20 yard range. Where I think it gets a little more interesting is kind of the struggles he had in terms of his deep ball accuracy, in terms of how is he leading players down the field. And oftentimes it felt like his receivers had to make some really awesome catches downfield to kind of mask some of those deficiencies. Now, he can hit a hole shot, you know, within that 20, 25 yard range where it's right in between the corner and safety. He can hit some really nice seam shots as well down the middle of the field. But in terms of like straight drop back vertical routes, you don't see a lot of that being thrown accurately. So I think that's kind of the part of the game that kind of worries me a little bit in terms of how it projects, because it's a game of inches at the NFL level. But you also have to be able to attack that area, those areas of the field. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of, obviously, when we saw Drew Brees towards the end of his career, a lot of his ways of attack was within that 10 to 15, 20 yard range, where he was attacking defenses and still being able to move the ball down the field. But he didn't have the big arm really most of his career, but especially late in his career. So I think McCarthy has a pretty good arm and can show it, but I think there is just not a consistency in the ball placement, specifically on vertical routes down the field, which, you know, it's not a, I don't think it's a big inhibitor of how successful he's going to be, but I feel like a big part of being able to kind of be a top flight NFL quarterback is the ability to hit the deep ball and hit it pretty consistently. So I think that's kind of the biggest area of improvement for him. But on a down-to-down basis, I mean, it's a multiple type of quarterback prospect that you can build with. But he's a guy I went through at year one, which is why I kind of hesitant taking him in the top 10. Obviously, the quarterback market demands that. But I do think there just needs to be there was a little more nuance to McCarthy's conversation that needs to be had in terms of not just projecting him, you know, what he could be in a few years, but where he stands right now and what kind of plan you have to have with him, because he's not a guy that you can draft and throw him out within a few weeks, you know, of the season starting, just because I don't think he's that at that point in his development yet.
That's a very good point, Devin. But another thing about his game that NFL teams really love is his staggering, and I mean staggering, success on third down. Like, if you look at his numbers on third down and 70 yards or more at college compared to the other quarterbacks in this class, the difference is staring. Like, he had an astonishing success rate from that down and distance, and I think that has a lot of NFL teams giddy about him.
Yeah, third down is a money down, and that's exactly what teams want, is guys that are able to move the chains and be able to find ways to get first downs and extend drives. And, you know, that's kind of why I talked a little bit about his mobility and running ability as well, him being able to do that on third down, but mostly wanting to be a passer, but choosing, you know, picking and choosing his spots. You could see him kind of mature as he went along. And while he's still kind of in that growth phase, it's pretty exciting for a player that age, you know, with not as many pass attempts, obviously, on third down, or not on third downs, but in general, have such a high success rate on third downs, is because he knows where he needs to get. He knows where to pick his spots and find the open guys and just move the chains. And I think it's kind of the inverse of what you see in some of the other draft prospects, which are trying to hit the home run ball or trying to hit the explosive play instead of being more focused on taking what the defense gives you. So I think with McCarthy, he does those things, which makes NFL teams pretty excited about what he brings to the table.
Absolutely, Devin. And outside of Caleb Williams and the Bears, I personally haven't seen a quarterback prospect and team connected together as much as Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos. On one hand, this pairing makes sense. First of all, the Broncos will likely have to select a quarterback on day two or three, since they lack the ammunition to trade up from that 12th overall pick. More importantly, Nix possesses the processing skills that Sean Payton covets in a quarterback and was described as a supercomputer by renowned NFL draft analyst Doug Farrar. However, Nate Tice of Yahoo Sports, another great NFL draft mind, went against the grain and suggested that Bo Nix is not the hand-in-glove fit with Sean Payton, many seem to think, due to his middle-of-the-road arm talent and the lack of professional-level throws he was asked to make at Oregon. Like, about a third of his throws last season were at or behind the line of scrimmage on bubble screens and stuff like that. Also, others on draft Twitter suggested he is not as good of a processor as he's perceived to be. What do you think of the potential fit of Bo Nix in a Sean Payton offense?
Yeah, it's a tough one to say, because I would say Bo Nix is a tough evaluation, because he's a guy that feels like obviously a beneficiary of a really good offense and a really good talent around him. But there was a lot of times that you watched him and he would turn down some down the field throws to take checkdowns instead and take the safer throw instead. And to me, he feels like kind of the type of quarterback that on those third and 12s, third and 15s, he's more opted to take what the defense is giving him in terms of the 5 yard throw or the 7 yard throw, short the sticks types of throws. So I think kind of from that perspective, I could see why people were a little hesitant or teams are even hesitant to take him in the first rounds because he gives you more floor than ceiling than some of these other quarterbacks that you see. I think the kind of that third down situation kind of encapsulate his game where early in his career and on third and 15, he's running around trying to make plays and you know, trying to find that explosive play or trying to find that big play to kind of swing momentum. And over the years, I felt like he obviously has matured and grown his game and understanding of this game. But at the NFL level, you have to be able to make those small special plays. Like, yeah, third and 12 and third and 15 are a low percentage third down conversion rate anyway, especially at the NFL level. But you can't take, like, you can take a quarterback prospect that will take what the defense gives you, and ultimately, you know, a guy that will move the ball and you can win with, but not because of. And I think that's kind of the delineation of him, and kind of like the that those first tier guys where it can be true difference makers, and the potential to be guys that you win because of their abilities and some of the what they do out of structure. Where I feel like Bo Nix was that early in his career, which was caused a lot of chaotic play, a lot of turnovers, a lot of errant throws, where he's kind of flipped it now, where he just takes what defense gives him, and he understands how to get the ball out quickly and when have that internal timer to get it out quickly. But I do think that oftentimes it was one or two reads and then check down. You know, sometimes it wasn't a full reprogression in what he brings to the table, which makes him more difficult. You know, obviously we're not in those quarterback rooms and we can only see what we see on the film, but he felt like a guy that turned down bigger throws at times to check down or to throw kind of short of the sticks or those types of throws, which kind of limited some of his already great production. You know, so he's a tough one. I do like Bo Nix ultimately. I think he's a guy that can be a spot star at the NFL level. But if you're the Broncos at 12, I'm not sure that's the move you want to make with a guy that is a bit older. And to me, he feels a little more like, you know, on the spectrum of you think about some of the quarterbacks taken recently, more in line with what you see with like Aiden McConnell, what he brought to Las Vegas. Compared to what you could bring, you know, and bring in a guy like JJ McCarthy. So, with Nix, I think he's more of the floor type of player where you're gonna get a guy that can start for you, and when things are good around him, and the supporting cast is good, and the offensive line is good. Obviously, as you saw when he transferred from Auburn to Oregon, those latter things were more present. You saw the best version of him, but I think there is no other way to go up for Bo Nix, in my opinion.
That scouting report says it all, Devin. That is exactly why I do not expect Bo Nix to be taken in the first round. And if the Broncos do take Bo Nix, it's going to be due to a trade back from 12 and netting another mid-round pick to subsequently use on Bo Nix. So that's where I think he ends up in this draft. And if there's a quarterback in this class who is a perfect symbol of the complexities of NFL talent evaluation, it is Washington's Michael Penix Jr. As Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated reported a few weeks ago, coaches are apparently higher on Penix than scouts are. When coaches look at him, they see a player who overcame two ACL tears in college and helped lead the Huskies to the national championship this past year. They're also impressed with Penix's deep ball. He was even more prolific on deep passes than Jaden Daniels was last year, plus his underrated athleticism, as evidenced by the 4.56 40 he ran at the UW Pro Day. But when scouts look at Michael Penix, they see someone who played for 6 seasons in college and whose weaknesses, such as attacking the middle of the field, accuracy struggles when forced off his spot, are pretty much baked in. In addition, many NFL scouts believe Penix was carried by his elite supporting cast at Washington that included likely first-round picks Roma Dunze and Troy Fautanu, plus Roger Rosengarten, Jalen Polk, and Jalen McMillan, who are all likely to be drafted later. Nonetheless, Joel Klatt, who is the color analyst for College Football on Fox, believes that if Penix is surrounded by a similar cachet of talent at the NFL level like the Dolphins or 49ers, he has an excellent chance to be even more productive than Brock Purdy and Tua Tagovailoa. Do you agree with Joel's assessment?
Yeah, I think I could see a path with Penix getting to that point and ultimately being a guy that can lift the supporting cast around him. You know, it's just so hard with especially with, you know, when you think about a guy like Penix and, you know, how unfair I would say some of the discussion is around him, just because I feel like, yeah, he played 6 years in college, but at least 3 of them were taken away by injuries, you know, and I think, again, you know, it's so difficult to kind of pin that down in a quarterback conversation. And just point to how long a guy was in college. Well, it took him a number of years to get fully healthy. You know, these last 2 years, the first time in his career where he went back-to-back seasons being healthy and actually being on the field. And we saw what he was able to do. Obviously, you think about the collection of talent, Kalen Dobert from Washington that moved over to Alabama now, and the play caller that he is, were ultimately special in the combination. But you couldn't have put any other quarterback, just any other quarterback in that system and be able to yield those results. In terms of Penix's ability to throw it vertically, attack vertically down the field, kind of that relentless kind of gunslinger mentality that he brings, teams are going to like that and the coaches are going to like that. You know, his ability, even if he makes a mistake, misses a throw, he's going to come back and go right at it. And I think, you know, when you think about kind of in this grand scheme of things, quarterbacks that are able to do that, can't say there's many that are they're going to attack right at the same player or the same area of the field from play to play like Michael Penix does. So, yeah, I could see him absolutely being a guy. Maybe he goes on day two and ends up starting games at the NFL level just because he has kind of that mentality, kind of that that obviously want to win, but proven winner too. You know, he won at Indiana. And I think a lot of people forgot about that. When he played, they were good. They just weren't some team that he was on that, you know, was 500. They were legitimately a winning team with him on the field. You know, whether it was his first full year starting 7-2 with Indiana, you know, in 2019, in 2020, they started off really hot. Obviously, it was a COVID season, but he played really well. 2021, he didn't really get a chance to fully play healthy, but 2022 and 2023, he won as well. So this is a guy that lifts the people around him. The character has been talked about quite a bit in terms of what he brings to the table, what he's dealt with, the adversity he's dealt with. And ultimately, I think that's what attracts a coach specifically, is that he's dealt with so much adversity and has dealt with people doubting if he, even himself, doubting himself in terms of will he be able to play at the college level. Now, you know, in terms of when it comes to NFL, I do agree with some of the evaluations in terms of his accuracy dips when pressure is around him. When teams are sending multiple blitzers his way, he's not the most elusive guy. I don't think his athletic testing always shows up on film, but in terms of if you're asking him to be kind of in that West Coast style of offense where you're just spreading the ball around him, being a distributor, I think he's a guy that could ultimately start NFL games and be pretty good at doing so, assuming that he stays healthy.
He is Devin Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, lead NFL draft writer and sports editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can follow him on X at RealD_Jackson. And Devin, before he lets you go, we have one more quarterback prospect to evaluate here. In recent days and weeks, A quarterback being aggressively hyped on draft Twitter is Spencer Rattler. Notable quarterback analyst Derek Klassen, who we mentioned earlier, said that Rattler's arm talent and pocket presence alone make him a better overall player and prospect than both Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. in his eyes, and not far off from Jaden Daniels and JJ McCarthy. In addition, my good friend Carl Dummler of Mile High Huddle said on our AFC West draft preview show a few weeks ago that Rattler is the best pure passer in this draft class aside from Caleb Williams. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong is the case for Spencer Rattler being that first quarterback off the board on day two?
I would say it's probably about a 4 right now, just because I do think that if a guy like Bo Nix makes it to round 2, he's going to be the first guy off, you know? So I think it kind of, the argument kind of hinges on where Bo Nix goes, because it feels like the NFL is pretty, I won't say high on him, but mildly high in terms of where kind of the consensus is on Bo Nix. I could see him being taken over Michael Penix for sure, because of the lack of injury history and kind of how he's reshaped his image and his game from his early days at Oklahoma. But I would say it's a 4 right now, just as I feel like the pecking order is really determinant on when that 5th quarterback comes off the board. Because I feel like Rattler has a good chance to be the 6th guy off the board, just because of Michael Penix's injury history and some of the uncertainty around that. But it feels just a little bit far-fetched that teams would have him over Bo Nix, which, you know, I'm sure some teams do. Obviously, analysts do, and some people see it that way. But I do think with Rattler is you just have to be a little careful in how high you take him, just because, yeah, he's a completely different player from when he walked into college and even when he last started at Oklahoma. But there's still a number of high variance plays where he trusts his arm too much. And when he forces throws into windows that are extremely small, and sometimes he can be burned by that. There's a few plays that he has here and there where he tries to do too much as well, and kind of still has that hero mentality, hero ball mentality, where he has to go out and make something happen. And so, and part of that had to do with the lack of supporting cast, really outside of Xavier Leggett this past year. Antoine Juice Wells was a guy that should have been another big target for him, but dealt with injuries and didn't play most of the season. But with Rattler, I do think you have to be careful. Well, yes, he is a quarterback that's kind of trending on social media right now and really a buzzy name, but there's still some flaws in this game that still need to be ironed out. And ultimately, that's a reason why he's still going on day 2 of the draft, even though, you know, he's a guy that has really done himself justice, I would say, in this draft process and done some really good things.
Tevin Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, NFL draft writer and lead sports editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Follow him on X at @RealD_Jackson. Tevin, thank you so much once again. And that does it for today here on Sports Crunch. But we'll be back in 48 hours with a Draft Eve special as my right-hand man, Hal Betts, and I dissect all the last-minute draft buzz and rumors and do our final mock draft of the cycle. So stay tuned. Also, please join Hal and myself again on Thursday night for our annual Round 1 live stream. Coverage begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will analyze each pick as it is made in real time. Please bookmark the link in my X and Instagram bios and join us for a fun-filled evening. Speaking of which, be sure to follow me on X at @DCrom59 and on Instagram and now Threads at @SportsCrunchWithDCrom. And remember, that's Crunch with a K. For Devin Jackson, this is David Cromwell saying so long, and whatever you do, please choose love, please choose kindness, please choose compassion, please choose selflessness, and please choose empathy, which are the core characteristics of the best teammates and teams in any sport. Until next time, cats, kittens, stay cool!